supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
It's thought that a black hole exists in the center of every spiral galaxy, including our Milky Way. But what if, in addition, there were many, many, many black holes to contend with? Let's take inventory with Derek Pitts, chief astronomer at the Franklin Institute. Derek, one's enough. What kind of a galaxy would sport more than one?
Well, it's beginning to look like lots of large spiral galaxies might be sporting lots of black holes, indeed.
Including ours?
Including ours. In fact, there was a study done recently by a group of astrophysicists at the Columbia University who were chasing down a theory about the possibility of there being smaller black holes associated with the supermassive black hole at the core of large galaxies. No evidence had been identified yet as to the existence of these small black holes. And the reason why is because whenever researchers have been looking for large energetic events associated with supermassive black holes, like perhaps large black holes, but not like supermassive black holes, they've always been looking for very, very high energy signatures, like the sign of a really big event taking place, whereas these other smaller black holes were exhibiting very, very low energy output. And they didn't really realize that this was something that could be looked for. And lo and behold, in our galaxy alone, a dozen of these smaller objects were identified in close proximity to our centrally located supermassive black hole.
Does Darwin's rule exist in the cosmos, meaning over time, do the big ones eat the little ones?
Well, if we had an opportunity to really look at a large number, a large sample of galaxies, we might be able to find that something like that is going on. But this is the first time we've been able to associate really small black holes with the supermassive black holes at the cores of galaxies. So in other words, we haven't done enough of this work yet.
Now let's go from the strange to the bizarre. We've learned about the proliferation of what can't be accounted for in the universe, and we call that dark matter. Could there be a galaxy that doesn't have dark matter?
As it turns out, a group of astronomical researchers has been able to identify a galaxy that is not only extraordinarily sort of sparse, almost transparent, but it also seems to have very little, if no, dark matter at all. That seems contradictory because our thought is that when you look at galaxies and you look at the rotational velocity of galaxies, that rotational velocity cannot be accounted for by the mass that is seen. So there must be some other hidden matter there, which is how we have this term dark matter. Well, maybe we don't really understand gravity well enough to understand that it's possible for a galaxy to have this kind of rotational velocity without the matter we need to see. So then that would cause a problem for all galaxies if, you know, we thought that dark matter was everywhere, but it's not here. So that disproves that idea right there already.
From the bizarre to the mundane, with clear skies, what's available to be seen overhead this week?
Thank goodness it's all visible stuff. We have great planets. Jupiter is up in the east after 10 p.m. Saturn and Mars are in the south in the pre-dawn sky, with Jupiter in the west about to set right after sunset. You can do that too. If you happen to be up early in the morning, you'll be able to catch Saturn and Mars with Jupiter way far over on the western side of the sky. Now, in the evening, Dave, we have a great series of constellations, but particularly individual stars we should take a look for. Let's start first with a bright red star over on the western side of the sky, part of the constellation Orion the Hunter. That's Betelgeuse. It's the ninth brightest star in our sky. It's a red supergiant, and it is so big, if we were to plop it right here in the center of our solar system, its size would extend beyond the orbit of Mercury, Venus, Earth, and Mars, out past the asteroid belt, almost out to Jupiter. It's about 640 light years away, and it's rather young, less than 10 million years old. Okay, but we know that this star is going to go supernova sometime in the next million years, so hold your breath. Maybe you'll get a chance to see it. The next star we should take a look at is the brightest star in our sky, Sirius. It's only about 8 light years away. It's only about twice the mass of our star, which makes it sort of on the small side. But this is a very interesting star because, as a very hot white star, it actually at one time had a companion that was a little bit bigger and a little bit brighter. We don't see it anymore because it burned through all of its energy supply much faster than its twin, and we now can only recognize it as a little tiny white dwarf tucked in very close to this bright star, Sirius. Last but not least, the bright red star Arcturus, over on the eastern side of the sky, right around 9 p.m. in the evening. This is the fourth brightest star in our sky, about 36 light years away, and just a bit more massive than our sun, but it's 25 times bigger. So here we can see these three stars quite easily. The youngest of them, Sirius, at 200 to 300 million years old. The next oldest, Betelgeuse, the bright red one in Orion, at 10 million years old. And then the granddaddy of all of them, Arcturus, at 7.1 billion years old.
Thanks, Derek.
My pleasure, Dave.
Derek Pitts, chief astronomer at the Franklin Institute. He joins us each week at this time on NewsWorks Tonight.